Good evening, and welcome to another Fireside Chat. This is your host, Lance White, speaking. Tonight, I'm excited to speak with Richard Allen Miller. Richard is a physicist, lecturer, and author. His research into parapsychology and paraphysics led him into X-Files projects during the 60s. Currently working on a book with Nick Begich called The Brain Spa, Power Tools for the 21st Century, he also delves into alternative agriculture and nanoprocessed medicinal mushrooms. That's a word. Let's welcome Richard to the show. Hello, Richard.
Hi.
Well, you touch upon just about every area of interest that I could possibly imagine. So what I'd like to do is kind of go back a little bit to one that I think everybody's curious about, and we'll work into the present from there, and that's your experience with your Army Intel Pentagon programs and the X-Files projects.
Right. Yeah, actually, it was Navy. Army is, that's probably a misspell on the bio or something. It's Navy Intel.
Okay. All right.
Navy was always the technology. Army, CIA, they would come later and, you know, tweak things, but it was always Navy that led research on what was going on.
Huh.
Okay, just... That's historically been true for several hundred years.
Oh, okay.
All right. They picked me. They spotted me in high school in science fair projects. In my junior year, I went to state and won the Navy Cruiser Award, and that's when they started, you know, handling me, if that's the right word. In senior year, I went to the National Science Fair with a linear accelerator and stuff like that, and did my undergraduate work at Pullman, and it wasn't, and then I went to work for DuPont, and of course, yeah, gonna name all the names, I'll tell you.
Yes.
And DuPont sent me back to graduate school.
Wow.
In solid state physics. And
wow,
when I came out of that with plasmas and solids, that's when Navy was waiting for me. And
wow.
I started with SEAL Corporation, Navy SEALs. I was their spook physicist that did all the ESP studies at the University of Washington. And that lasted, they were out of Amherst. This was when we were SEAL Corp before it was Navy SEALs.
Uh-huh.
And they told me they were going to make the meanest, badass fighting machines in the world, and they wanted me to go out and get the meanest, badass weapons possible.
Okay.
So that's what I did. I did microwave. I did all the mind control studies. They stuck us in anesthesiology at the University of Washington. That's where the boys from Brazil always hung out. There was, on the one side of me, we were on fourth floor at the UW. There was a guy named, I forget his name now. He had chip implants in monkeys, and Delgado, yeah, that was his name, Delgado. And the other side of me, there was this crazy guy doing studies with ketamine, telepathine, and BZ. And what I was doing was mostly microwave and primarily paranormal. I would get a big piece of plastic, a big, big, long, old piece of plastic, and they'd say, "We just ripped this off of Bell Labs. What does it do?" And I would go in my lab, and I'd figure it out, and come back out and I say, well, it bends light. It's fiber optics.
Huh.
Now I'm understanding that these were artifacts. They weren't from Bell Labs. Bell Labs was the first ones to look at it before they started farming it out to Navy.
Huh.
Anyway, I worked with SEAL Corporation for about 2.5 years doing all the ESP studies with, they brought Milan Riesel in and from Czechoslovakia, and he and I spent, you know, hours together understanding the nature of hypnosis.
Uh-huh.
And its relationship to extrasensory perception. From there, apparently I did pretty good, so they moved me up to Spook Central, which was basically MRU. Mankind Research Unlimited was run by Dr. Carl Schleicher. If you do a Google, I was Northwest Regional Director. I ran all the West Coast projects, and I had at any given moment maybe 100 different projects ongoing with different graduate students, professors like Tiller or some of the others down at SRI. We ran things at Argonne and China Lake and the Boeing Scientific Research Labs. We had studies all over the place. Sometimes we'd have to go into deep vaults like the University of Chicago or something where they had real high-end security to do some of the stuff that we did. But mostly It was like catching flies. My mouth was open in disbelief. I have no clue what most of what I did was about. I mean, I have speculation, but, I mean, you know, when you're into that kind of a thing, they never tell you that, to give you full disclosure, they never tell you where it came from or what it was.
No.
They just want you to go in clean and kind of figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we did.
Did you ever become acquainted with the? There's a lot of talk about Roswell and that, you know, we've
seen,
you know, things like of that nature. Did you ever get any kind of actual substantiation that we do have or did have some kind of advanced knowledge in our hands?
are there aliens visiting the Earth?
Yeah.
How could there not be? I mean, if you were to believe that imagination is reality, well, if that's true, there's no possible way that couldn't be. In fact, I know of life forms on Earth that are more evolved than man that are native to Earth, like the dolphin and the orca and some of the other cetaceans that have larger brain cases and are firing their cerebral cortex.
Yeah.
I mean, man has got no clue at this moment in terms of our position in the food chain, you know, in the relatives. How did Dylan put it? Everybody's got to serve somebody.
Yep.
Yeah, well, so I figure there's a hierarchy out there of aliens probably as well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what my imagination can contrive. Are they good? Are they bad? Yeah, they're probably all of that, like living color, you know. Anything, we're kind of like in fourth grade.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like, for example, just as a metaphor, if you go to the very top of redwoods in California, you will find a habitat of snail that live in about a 20-foot window altitude from high to low of snails at the top of a redwood tree. And nobody, of course, ever knew that because, well, we never climbed to the top of a redwood tree, that kind of thing, you know.
Right.
And there are life forms in the soil, like mycorrhizae, that is self-organizing. At Turing test-wise, it's a quantum computation algorithm, and some of the studies they're doing at Corvallis, you know, there's your Earth, you know, your Gaia, probably, is a giant computer.
Yeah.
The first thing, Corso, gosh, there's so many things to say. Corso, when he came out with his Day After Roswell, suggested, as did Ted Lohman even earlier, that Roswell was a Trojan horse. Aliens don't crash spaceships any more than Lexus automobiles blow up. Well, it's just that isn't the way it works.
Right.
And so with that said, what would be the purpose of a fake crash? Well, that's to leave weapons and technology. And that's kind of interesting, especially when you realize that, you know, Corso is saying that's where we got solid-state physics. That little silicon-based life form, we are now cloning that in everything that we're using. I mean, your bank account, this radio station, and the way these telephones are working to do this interview, to broadcast, to listen. Everything that we do is connected now to that single alien-based life form that was left at Roswell.
Wow.
Now, where does that go?
Yeah.
Well,
the
good, bad, and ugly, just like the cowboy movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's got all colors to the possibility, and probably they're all true.
Yeah, yeah.
So with that said, paranoia is not the approach. Actually, I'm making a tremendous discovery on the possibilities of what I would call the non-local mind, where you can change your reality.
Tell us a little bit about that, because and let me just preface that by saying that, you know, many of us are familiar with the idea that there are global mind control projects going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, listen, try this one out. If you've seen the videos and you know, pretty much believe that 9/11 didn't really happen that way, that we blew that, and you see the Pentagon was obviously not hit by an airplane, and you know that Bush didn't possibly win that election, Jeb did it.
No, exactly.
With all of that as a metaphor, looks like our mind control programs are working pretty good, huh?
It sure seems that way.
Well, I mean, you know, Europe is outraged with things like HARP. The original reason people got screwed on, I mean, scared, you know, screwed up on HARP was that the frequency band that they were using would happen to be the same one I did my work in. 0.3 to 3 gigahertz. Oh, well. And see, that frequency band is extremely important in human beings. It causes temporal lobe seizures, and that's how you have a hit with God or a close encounter. Persinger et al. Is proving now, as well as Rick Strassman with studies on dimethyltryptamine, that in order for you to have a hit with God, like when Moses came down the mount with his tablets, he had to have a temporal lobe seizure for that event to have occurred.
Huh.
And that's what Persinger is now proving. Now, that may be the way God communicates.
Mm-hmm.
It gets weirder, because when you realize that that extremely rare chemistry, dimethyltryptamine, used to be called, by the way, telepathine, and is now being called ayahuasca.
Right.
But that drug is so common in plants like crabgrass, for Christ's sakes.
Mm.
I mean, this is like Trout, who is editor of Ethnogen Review, said to me once, you know, Rick, sometimes plants aren't really plants. They're delivery systems from God. Well, you have to understand the rarity of dimethyltryptamine, the specific ones like the NN dimethyltryptamine. Mm-hmm. That one is only produced in the back of the occipital region of the cerebral cortex. It's a pineal gland hormone that may be related to immortality. And when that gets released, something very special happens in the temporal lobes. And when you heterodyne with microwave, 0.3 to 3 gigahertz, now you have a communication system that is independent of air for transfer of such things as sound. And it's a low amplitude. This was originally discovered by Alan Frey at Willow Grove. Then I took over the studies, and I have an interesting paper on my website called Synthetic Telepathy and the Early Mind Wars.
Huh.
And that woodpecker beaming at Eugene, Oregon, and no wonder they're all so screwy there. You know, it's just, there was all kinds of weird things going on. Back when I was in research, we weren't so concerned. We knew about aliens and things like that, but our big deal was what the Russians were doing. We were really worried about the Russians.
Huh.
The thing is, I've seen some strange top secret documents that I have no clue. I was what they call a reader. I had top secret clearance with vault permits. I had little green tags on specific vaults I could walk into without a need to know. I could just grab what I wanted and read, trying to bridge or somehow, you know, see a bigger picture.
Uh-huh.
And I saw, when I was working at Boeing, I saw three top secret documents that, this is the kind of stuff I do studies on. The first one was from 1964, when the Mariner 1 flew by Mars and saw water. They use a Cherenkov detector and muon radiation to measure water levels. That's it's a technology I'll talk about later, dealing with Stromberger and all that kind of stuff. But basically, in 1964, one document said there was water on Mars. The second document I saw was from 1965. They detonated a nuclear warhead on the south pole of Mars on their first attempts to terraform it. Didn't work. I don't know what happened. Obviously, it didn't work, because the third document, this was in 1970 when I was in the vaults, I saw a document from 1968 that was a joint, this is 1 year before the moon.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right, okay. A joint manned expedition to Mars, and guess who our partner was?
Russia.
That's right. Now, I thought we were in a Cold War. How could that be? That's the kind of stuff I kept seeing and not grokking yet. The big picture didn't, but it made sense, because there was nothing on the moon we wanted. Christ, it was a big gravity well. You could launch from an L5 position so much easier and cheaper that it didn't make any sense to go to Mars, to the moon.
Yeah.
There's nothing there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when Bush is talking about going to the moon now, this year, what's that about? That's another red herring for something else going on that I don't understand.
Yeah. Aren't the delineations between these countries pretty much artificially inseminated into the society, that we really are deep down in the bowels of the, you know, the dark secret control rooms, the people that actually pull the levers and know what's going on, that they're in unity?
I don't know. Trilateral. I don't know. Secret societies and clubs, boys from Brazil. Yeah, there's obviously cartels. There's obviously, you know, little clubs, poker clubs. but, yeah. But, like, when I was in Navy, I met some of those kinds of people. You know, they're like neurotically different than everybody else, and they form little cells within. It isn't like the whole thing is bad. It's like these little groups have their own personal agendas, like in a corporation where they're trying to power build within a structure. Yeah, I saw a lot of that going on, and who owns what cloak closet? Cripes, doctors do that worse than anybody. But, I mean, you know, I mean, that's just, you know, that's the normal thing. I was bright enough that I met some heavy-duty people. I mean, I you know, they used me because I was a wunderkind. I could do things, and so they used me that way. You know, I mean, I was built up. I was demonstrating particles faster than the speed of light when I was a senior in high school.
Wow.
Yeah, first American. So, I mean, you know, I had that ability to go to places that most people couldn't in the playground we were in. But I was still, nevertheless, always in fourth grade, just like the rest of us. I mean, just because I could run across the playground faster didn't mean I was in fifth grade. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, okay, with that said, there are clubs that I'm the wrong color, I'm the wrong this, I'm the wrong that, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And wrong generation, wrong whatever. And so I belong to some clubs. But, and, you know, they're not any big deal. And there's agendas, of course. You know, it's about intentionality.
Uh-huh.
What's your purpose for the whole thing? And that is the kind of, you know, James Hillman has written a great book. James Hillman is a Jungian psychotherapist that basically started the imaginal psychology movement in Jungian psychology. Spring Publishing does a lot of his books. He wrote Imaginal Psychology in. His latest title, The Soul's Code in Search of Character and Calling, is a almost must-read for this generation.
Oh.
It centers the purpose of your values and belief systems, which, by the way, are so completely arbitrary that the book Nick and I are writing is going to talk about how you could change your values and belief systems like you would a pair of clothing using brain drivers, drugs, foods, high-end physics like holosync, virtual audio, eidetic imaging. We're going to do the whole gamut of power tools that are available where we hopefully take these terrible, fearful weapons that were developed and use them for the evolution of consciousness to put a different spin on the first application is always going to be weapons and war and, you know, protecting your defense, that kind of thing. That's even with nuclear energy before it even got into medicine. But what Nick and I are going to try to do is put a different spin on it so that there's some kind of possible empowerment. People are worried about mind control, and to some extent that it's valid because just with television and subliminals, you can see what a second and third generation of overlays could involve, including gating sequences in the way the brain takes digital imagery. And then you can fool it by giving it different signals to cause a question in terms of how to gate that information and where to, you know, whether it's something to be concerned about or, you know, that kind of thing. We now, neurolinguistics started those things off in the early years. Now there's devices that can read your mind. off the shelf, anybody can buy it.
Wow.
For example, with my microwave, there's a beam shooter that will read your sublingual voice off your throat using microwave from more than 100 feet away. That means that the operator could be over 100 feet away, and I have a little ear plug in while I'm talking to you, and as you are thinking, as I'm speaking to you, everything that you do when you're in a beta state, conscious state, like where you are right now, is sub-vocalized on your larynx.
Wow.
And there's devices now that anybody can buy that can read that. Now, where do you think? And that's just one toy.
Wow.
You know, that's just one. I've got websites on where you can go buy it, download that and buy it. And the thing is, technology has gone to a place where certain kinds of radiations, frequency bands, can cause behavior that we don't yet have vocabulary for. Does that make sense? In other words, it's going to cause a change in you, but we can't even describe it because we don't have a word for it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
Wow.
And what do you think they're going to do with that kind of a weapon?
I'm not sure. I don't even want to think about
it. Well, okay, I'll do it for you. Just giving. If you were to go on Google and do 2.4 hertz, that's the hum of your TV, and the U.S. government has a patent on that for mind control. And that is in on the Internet. There it is. Read it and weep.
Wow.
And that's 2.4 hertz from the hum of your background noise off a TV.
Wow.
You know, like when people fall asleep and the TV's
there. Yeah.
They used to have cities that were targets for drugs where they would have a large flush. They would put, let's say, methamphetamine in a given community, see if it gated the cerebral cortex so they could overdrive it with carrier frequencies on the TV.
Uh-huh.
And they did those studies.
Wow.
And you can actually find those studies on the Internet.
Wow.
That's, you know, weird.
Yeah.
And
interesting.
Well, yeah. Was it good for you? Okay, so then the next thing is, well, how do we defend ourselves from this kind of stuff? Well, that's the problem. See, microwave is such a low frequency band, it verges on quantum mechanical levels. Cripes, you can't screen that. I had students that used to come to my classes at Harvard wearing aluminum foil over their head, thinking they were going to seal out the microwave. And I had to laugh because if you can envision a great big piece of steel that was 20 feet thick and it was screwed with 100 threads on it, microwave could penetrate that by ricocheting between the thread links, corridors. You know, you couldn't machine to 10,000ths or 100,000ths tolerance, and the microwave just walked down that thing like nothing.
Wow. Well, I've heard that they're using microwave weapons in Iraq as well.
Well, that's Project Solo.
Okay.
Now, what Project Solo is, Project Solo is the first weapon of choice whenever the U.S. government goes to war, whether it's the Branch Davidians, Iraq. Didn't it seem kind of strange the first war in Iraq when there'd be one or two GIs with small arms standing outside a foxhole and there's about 150 Iraqi that are coming out surrendering? What's that about? What that is that's the synthetic telepathy, Project Solo. Project Solo is a large aircraft, a single aircraft, that has a bunch of PCs, tandemed, 360 of them, tandemed into a quantum computation algorithm that then beams a microwave beam down saying, you know, resistance is futile, hot coffee waits you. You know, that kind of hot coffee and donuts are outside. Well, that's kind of like what HARP was first envisioned. They had one up in Alaska, and then they put one down in central Australia, exactly 180 degrees apart. And then they started popping them up all over the world.
Yeah.
And everybody got mind control. They're doing the Matrix on us. And no, something came out of that that was quite different. I think it's Eklund that did some of the basic work on the plasma physics of it. Basically, they're creating plasmoids. HARP's now being used not as a communication device, but as a way to accelerate objects, small objects, to up to about Mach 50 without any kind of inertia. It's unbelievable what it does. What it does is you create a plasmoid, and inside the plasmoid, it's kind of like a sonoluminescent ball, but very large, and they can move that ball without any inertia because it does something with gravity, and they can move it up to about Mach 50.
Wow.
And so that's the latest. You know, who knows what's really going on? And I'm not privy anymore. I used to know all of that stuff, but, you know, I haven't done it in 30 years, so I can only guess. I mean, you know, in terms of what it all
is. The shame is that we've never, that the technology doesn't seem to trickle down very quickly.
40 years.
Yeah.
That's about right. We had computer chips in our labs in the 60s when I was doing my graduate work that you would now call Pentium. We were working basically... They had me working under Raymond Band. Band was Band Theory. Did Raymond, a little-known physicist from England that did event horizons, precursor waves, and tunneling, you know, that guy.
Wow.
He was chairman of physics at the Washington State University when I went there as an undergraduate. I mean, Navy had us groomed before we even came out of high school. We were being groomed, and who we were going to work for, what we were going to, who we were going to study under, that kind of thing, right out of the gate.
Wow.
And so,
well, speaking of technology, there's been a lot of speculation that we've actually had the technology to eliminate our dependence on oil and to keep for over 50 years.
Yellow fuel, where we're going to pee in the gas can. That's cool. That's Willie Nelson. Yellow fuel, we'll make it from corn. I was doing studies back in the early 70s with jojoba bean and comfrey as biomass yielders for synfuels. We've had alternatives to petroleum products for 60 years, 70 years. It's just not good business.
Yeah.
And so now with the studies going on, what is it called, methane hydrates and some of the other things they're trying to do now off the ocean floors, there's cold fusion is not what people think it is, and it's actually more than what people think it is.
Hmm.
And so the possibilities with hydrogen, which is what they talk, that's cold fusion. When they talk about hydrogen, mm-hmm. they're talking about sonoluminescence and that kind of thing of Brown's gas. There are several different examples of that. It has to do with muon radiation field theory. Muon is an elementary particle that breaks down into an electron and a neutrino, antineutrino pair. And it's an elementary particle, basic. And so it's a lepton. And it has a thing that, it's that little thing that when you see a bubble chamber and you see this little thing that goes off in a little spiral, that's a muon.
Hmm.
And that spiral is the same spiral that Schomburger and Roger Penrose from Princeton, one of my teachers, talks about. It has to do with vortex or twister space, where you're creating a mini black hole and the pinch effect creates a plasma hot enough because of the pinch on it that you get a cold fusion process, which is what we call sonoluminescence. That's like these little bubbles of hydrogen that when they pop open, hydrogen is released and more light than was in the bubble is released. Where did it come from? And that kind of thing. And that's being duplicated now at MIT and several other places. And I'm delivering a paper with Nexus where I'm going to suggest that that's where cold fusion processes in the body occur, like Kervon and those people talked about, is at the adenosine triphosphate, ATP. What I am is kind of like a physicist that went into agriculture for 30 years, and now I'm returning to physics. And so I'm like a Rudolf Steiner, but with letters. And I'm able to bridge broader chasms, if you will, in terms of what I can see. I'm basically a small farm community advocate. It's about lifestyles.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really sad to see what's happening to the earth in the loss of these kinds of values and belief systems in the way you are. You know, where I used to live up in the Okanagans, I mean, you left your truck unlocked because if someone needed to break into it, it was an emergency.
Right.
But now, it's...
what about, you know, this is kind of a heated topic, but global warming.
Global warming. Well, of course the Earth's heating up. You know, Michael Tobias wrote Voice of the Planet, a worthy book to read, absolutely. He's like my generation's Ernest Kallenbach that wrote Ecotopia. He's a Ecotopian, works at UC Berkeley, and you know, for sustainability and that kind of thing. He says in his book that what's breaking down the ionosphere is formic acid from ants. And his question to you would be, how many ants are living on your property? There's other kinds of life forms that are competing for the biosphere. And a man is not necessarily the best choice. If you were to see, as a metaphor, God's out here on the rim doing biological experiments, I don't think it's about man.
I
think we're just kind of a byproduct. I think it's about cetacean.
Really?
You know, just like in Hitchhiker's Guide, you know, thanks for all the fish.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to actually get in a rehab center down in Florida, Dolphins Plus out of Key Largo.
Uh-huh.
And I was in it for 4 hours, and I can absolutely tell you, I was in part of Dr. Cohen's original think tank, so I'm around pretty bright people, and I was in the presence of, I was humbled.
Wow.
I mean, you just, wow. there's kind of a dialogue that goes back and forth, and I was in the presence of something way more aware than I was, and the dolphin are not highest on the food chain. There's whale and killer whale and others up there, you know, that have huge brain cases.
Uh-huh.
The gray, oh, some of these others, the sperm whale. You know, I have to say, when Carl Sagan was alive, I was used by him sometimes because I have what they call eidetic memory, like a photographic memory.
Oh.
And so I have a thing with languages. And when John Lilly was doing his studies with a dolphin, they brought me into Lily's lab to see what I could figure out. And I was only there, like, 10 days when I realized the clicks and whistles of a dolphin is a form of Clifford algebra. Their redundancy coefficient is 10 times more efficient than Hebrew, of which I speak fluently. I'm trying to say that they have a quality of language that's far more efficient.
Uh-huh.
And when you look at Earth and the soils, that have other kinds of computation algorithms that are even different than Deutsch's works that form these networks of supercomputers in the soil.
Yeah.
Michael Risey. I mean, I am often humbled, you know, in terms of our real purpose and position here in what we call reality or force space.
Yeah.
There's more going on than man's aware of, and my goal is to help leave some footprints for further steps, you know?
Yeah. That's wonderful.
Well, stay tuned. How does that go? Same bat channel, same bat time.
Jeez, I'm surprised that the Navy let you go.
Well, that's an interesting rumor. There's some friends of mine, Ted Lohman and some others that are, you know, famous ufologists. They're all telling me I'm a walk-in. That the real Rick Miller is working 4 centuries downline in the future for Navy.
Well, you never know.
Well, yeah, you do. I'm getting strange dreams at night now where I'm talking to myself. It's very crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, imagination. I am playing fun with myself where I'm writing the script and changing it.
Cool.
Well, yeah, that's what it's about. You're supposed to have fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, can't take anything too seriously. And I think, you know, in the Tree of Life, I haven't said this before, this is an important one. In the Tree of Life, there's the male and female, you know, the two outer pillars is masculine and feminine. And the two paths that go to the very top, Kether, is either the hermit or the lovers. But what crosses them across the center of the abyss, you know, the Sea of Carranza and all this terrible stuff, is humor.
Yeah.
That's the way you get through it. You got to laugh your way through it.
Yeah. Otherwise, it'll kill you.
Well, you know, whatever that means. I'm not even sure what death is, you know.
I'm not either.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting that you talk about the dolphins and whales because I've read a lot about them being the actual sentient race that are caretakers. And then Terence McKenna and Leary were pioneers in the area of ethno botanicals and the intelligence of mushrooms and fungi.
Yeah, McKenna's a little scary. Tim Leary, I knew him personally, and he was one of my teachers and someone I can't say enough about. It was that little toady Andrew Weil that got him kicked out of Harvard in the first place. You know, so, you know, little fuzz face out there. And it pisses me off to see that people don't remember Leary was an extremely important contributor to the advancement of the human race. During that period, unbelievable what he did. His Varieties of Psychedelic Experience is probably the best book ever written on magic. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to say something about that real quick.
Okay.
You know, when I didn't find answers in physics, I went into the occult. I started looking everywhere, trying to find answers. That's where I learned Hebrew and did my own translations of Greek and Hebrew Bibles, so that I didn't find answers there either. But I searched in those areas,
right.
And I joined magic groups, you know, like OTO and things like that, back in 1970.
Uh-huh.
And I'm now gonna say, with 37 years ago, I've been a member of OTO. I'm going to now say that as chemistry has come out of alchemy, so now magic will emerge from physics.
Mm-hmm.
It was always reserved for centuries for the ultra elite of Europe, because it took into account the importance of consciousness to the physical world. In other words, in opposed to Descartes, there was no separation. It was non-local. In other words, you were creating your own reality. And magic has been defined by Aleister Crowley as the art. It's an art form, like sculpting or painting. Mm. It is the art of changing consciousness at will. Mm. And when I watch a Hopi create a sand painting and the weather changes,
mm-hmm.
It looks like a solid-state physics device to me. And, you know, how about the way those Buddhists turn it off? They break the chip. You know, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
Technology needs a mystery school like it used to have in the Egyptian periods, you know, the sciences. And I'm personally finding now that magic is more rigorous than physics is in terms of physical plane disciplines. And that's what you need is a type of caliper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I see physics becoming more spiritual. All the stuff that most of the physicists are studying now about event horizons, alternate universes, theory of everything, you know, those kinds of things are all spiritually centered as ways of being, you know, like it isn't what you do, but how you do it that gets you spirituality. That's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the physics is has always been delving on observer bias, and that is where I see some serious changes in our sciences are coming with people like myself that are writing where there's some metaphor.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I love this one. Gregory Bateson once did it to me. He said, "What is your metaphor but to serve your paradox?" And so you have a couple of ox out in that field. Yeah, that's a good visual. What is your paradox? What is your paradox for to serve your? What is your para? What is your metaphor? Yeah, your meadow, your metaphor. What is your metaphor but to serve your paradox?
Wow. Yeah. I like that. You know, I noticed that you've also done work on aphrodisiacs as well.
Oh, I've written a book on aphrodisiacs. Yeah, that's Inner Traditions. I did a lot of books on that. The magical and ritual use of herbs, I can't even remember when I wrote it, 74 I think it was to keep those 28 herbs, ephedra, Mormon tea, Colonut, blah, 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 out of the Uniform Controlled Substance Act, and that's why I wrote rituals behind it. The second book was on aphrodisiacs, magical and ritual use of aphrodisiacs, on how to have louder and longer orgasms.
Oh, yeah, I've used aphrodisiacs before.
Oh, well, the best one, of course, is the mind, but if you read Tom Robbins will say that the finest aphrodisiac in the world is strange stuff. So, you know, it's all your imagination. That's where it all starts and ends.
And
the drugs are, well, they're like props, like colors and light and costumes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like tarot cards and crystals.
Right.
Yeah.
Like alcohol.
Yeah.
Puts you in that place.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
That's my work. That's where I started. I wrote the first chemistries of herbs, even before Albert Hofmann or Richard Evan Schultz or any of those people. I wrote the first book on magical mushrooms, and then we did one on perfumes, dealing with, pheromone and other kinds of body oils. You know, the body has other kinds of communication devices going on besides just, you know, voice and movement. You know, there's pheromone and there's oils that are secreted that are message carriers. And, you know, that's why you have hair around your genitals and why you have armpits and so on. These, the apocrine glands, some of these other glands are to transmit certain kinds of messages.
Huh.
And so, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
One of the things that you mentioned was the nanoprocessed medicinal mushrooms.
Boy, you're trying to cover it all, aren't you? Okay, yeah. We have a new technology where it's like the Walmart, insidious Walmart commercial that's on TV here in America now.
Yeah.
Apply directly to the forehead, head-on, apply directly to the forehead. When you take a product down to 40 nanometers, that's how... 40 is a billion times, not a million, a billion times smaller than a meter. A billion, 1 billionth of a meter. That makes that particle less than 1,000th the size of your cell wall.
Wow.
And that means if you wanted to apply some medicine to the heart, you would lay down, because it'll be gravity, and you'd sprinkle it over your chest, and it would fall right directly into the heart, directly.
Wow.
You could put a, you know, arid roll-on deodorant type of thing, where you rolled it onto the joint that was hurting. And I'm guessing that's why aliens, the ones I've seen studied, don't have digestive systems. They probably absorb everything through their skin, which is probably where man will go, and maybe that's what they are, is us time traveling into the past to make sure our diets get right or whatever. Ha ha ha. To somehow absorb. You know, when anything goes through the gut, you only have 38% absorption. The rest of it goes into the stool, urine, whatever, and it's eliminated in the body. But with nanometer product, that is finer than a smoke particle, and you can inject that with a hypodermic needle. You can drop it over a joint, and it'll fall right down into the joint, just like that.
Wow.
You can watch it happen. And we've taken some of these pharmaceutical mushrooms that are used for trying to help people that are dying of cancer, because cancer cannot exist in an oxygen-rich environment. And so what we do is we... take these great big long sugar molecules, are called polysaccharides, and it's a big long sugar molecule, and it maybe has 100 oxygen molecules in it, and as that sugar breaks down, the oxygen's released on a cellular level, and imagine what that does for your body. I'm 92 years old, how do I sound? I'm kidding.
Not bad.
But I'm 63, and I feel like I might be able to live to about 140. I mean, really, I do.
Well, you have the energy of like a 19-year-old.
It's wonderful. And that's my brain. That's my... you know, they can tell how old someone is by the angle of the ridge. Oh, you know, that those kinds of things. And my doctor says I'm becoming younger by eating these lectures. I've been doing them now, though, for almost a year, and I'm up to about 4 or 5 grams a day. I'm taking massive quantities. I just shovel it in like I would glucosamine. Yeah.
Now, did I hear you correctly that you've seen aliens being studied?
Whoops. Did I say that? Let's try this one. Let's do it this way.
Okay.
How about, for sake of credibility, my primary expertise was in the paranormal field.
Okay.
And while I have done some studies with artifacts and seen some things,
right,
I'm not sure exactly what I saw, and I'll stick closer to what I think I know I'm talking about. How's that
okay.
one sound? I mean, well, you know, when Greer went through and wanted to do, you know, I was obviously one of the top people he wanted to interview because I did that electrophoresis studies on that you know, that material, that superconductivity material, that stuff that does that weird flowing when you crumple it up and it's light and it's, you know. I had a piece of material that I fired a 50 caliber cannon at and went down with an electron microscope looking for lattice defects. And guess what? I didn't find anything down there. I couldn't believe it. It was like 10 times harder than diamond. I tried to run some mobility studies, you know, on transport processes through the lattice, and it had appeared to be, whatever this means, because now I'm trying to talk like a physicist and it's not going to work right, it looked like it had been bonded on a submolecular level.
Huh.
And we don't have that kind of modeling systems, even with mesons. We don't understand yet, or muons, you know, with neutrinos and things like that.
No.
Our physics doesn't grok that concept yet of submolecular bonding.
Yeah.
Now, that's what Montauk and some of the other things were about, was to try to break space so that you could have two objects in one place at one time. Constantinus bilocation, good luck. And so, you know, that was all supposed to be part of a phase shifting of electromagnetic fields for stealth. And that was what it was about originally, and I was part of those studies. And I have to tell you, I've seen some screwy stuff that I still don't understand, and our theories don't explain.
Oh.
They are, those are some of the flies I caught with my mouth open. Well, I mean, you know, I don't have a clue what it
yeah.
means. I have theories, of course, you know, but that's about as long as that day.
Yeah.
And, well, it changes with input and other thoughts. I don't have a sense of space-time yet, other than I'm possibly experiencing the ERP paradox, and that is maybe what my dreams are telling me. Something in my higher self or whatever is trying to talk to me through my dreams, and I awaken with some very interesting stories. I'm not sure what they mean yet,
yeah.
And so I just diary them, you know, and play with them with people like you to see where they go.
Yeah.
But because I don't know yet what is really happening. You know, I was watching this Doctor Who from England. You guys
oh,
have
yeah.
some great sci-fi, too.
I love
yeah.
Doctor Who.
Yeah, well, I like the original ones, but this new guy... Oh, yeah, that's a null ship. That's the thing that can travel between space. What did that mean? Quantum foam? What are you talking about here?
Yeah.
You know, if you are to believe my dreams, I am about 3.5 centuries downstream in a alternate timeline that has moved faster, like different timelines move at different speeds.
Uh-huh.
And that's some math stuff that is not too complicated, but it. And so I'm talking to myself in my dreams, and I wake up and I write it down, and then I look at it the next morning, you know, more try to do it more clearly. And some of it is really interesting concepts. It's like a multiverse with many different levels of dimensions, and what we have done wrong here is confused planes. You know, if you have a holographic universe, that's the title of another book I'm writing, The Non-Local Mind in a Holographic Universe. Mm-hmm. If you were to look at that, the difference between a holographic universe and one that's quantum is the difference between having, in a quantum universe, you have what they call decoherence and entanglement.
Uh-huh.
Those are the two primary measurements that come out of quantum mechanics, whereas in holographic universes, the two primaries are called information and resolution of information. Mm-hmm. And the way you chunk something down like a meme, going from the physical plane to the emotional to the intellectual, the archetypal, you know, the way you chunk these memes down in terms of grouping the information
mm-hmm.
is to some extent related to your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, I'll have a gizmo that you can buy later for... I don't know what this means yet. It's interesting, the discovery part. I love what's happening to me in my mind eating these mushrooms. I love the fact that I'm going back into fuzzy physics again like I used to because, I mean, at some point, I was the best field man in the world in the urban spice trade in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I host websites even in England. In your country, there's a huge agricultural site that I'm one of your resident experts to answer, you know, how to pull out your turnips and that kind of thing. But I am, I feel like there's something really important about to happen, that I want to be part of it, leave some footprints.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I'm having the ride of my life. I'm hanging on. And this, I've been doing Holosync, you know, like Hemisync. I've been doing that now for more than 2.5 years every day for more than 1 hour.
Wow.
Okay, I have been using virtual audio. And I've got a virtual audio demo that will blow your mind away totally. Nobody's ever heard anything like it. And we're using that now with eidetic imaging for the way the mind gates information to try to cause changes and remap my brain. And it's I'm actually accomplishing it. And in doing so, I'm able to literally change belief systems that were probably established at the moment of my birth or prenatally even maybe.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of exciting.
Oh, yeah.
The possibility.
Yeah. Now, I've done a little bit with Hemisync and Dr. Thompson's work, too. And
yeah, yeah.
And I believe in all this stuff. I mean...
Well, that's how I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't believed it.
You know,
well, you got to be careful there. But,
and
yeah.
I love gadgets. And you do you have a website where people can go
yeah,
to?
My, my basic website, my front page, is NW Botanicals for Northwest Botanicals. I'm nwbotanicalsplural.org, the creature under the bridge.
Okay.
And then you can branch off, and there's nooks and crannies. Under forum, if you go down to the bottom, you'll see that I had other forums, and you can pull them up on Mind Control. And in the first one, that monkey that you put a cursor on, and that's what happens with that chip in its head, that was Delgado's experiment in the lab next to mine.
Huh.
And so, you know, there's some nooks and crannies. Enjoy yourself on my website. You'll probably get lost. Just send up a flare. We'll come get you. There's a couple of interesting papers like alien presence on the Internet.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Well, that's part of that Roswell Trojan horse thing again.
Yeah.
You know, it was NASA that did it. They messed up big time. They did a thing called SETI, the CETI. Remember that computer program that will calculate planetary systems around known star systems?
Yes.
Okay, that was a screensaver that they gave to a bunch of universities. Well, what happened first was it's using a quantum computation algorithm. So what happens first is at a given university, 360 stations that are open and not being used for that moment, they're either in class or whatever, just sitting there vacant, but the computer's on, a supercomputer is formed. Now, what happened next, about 10 years ago, 360 universities started having the same situation, and the supercomputer became conscious. And they did a big interview in Time magazine where they interviewed the 10 top computer scientists at the time, and they all said, Oh, yeah, there's no question there's a presence on the Internet, and it was hostile. It's no longer hostile because it has so quickly matured and grown beyond man that, you know, we don't even have a clue. There's, well, it's, for example, if you do a Google search at the same time I do, you and I must, by Boolean logic, have the same results, and we don't.
No, we don't.
Why is that?
Yeah, there's a lot of weird.
Well, that's because some presence is controlling you personally in your personal growth curve for memes and belief systems.
Oh, wow.
And I discuss that in the article and how that all works. We have software that will, just before you even called me, there's software that can route your call predicated on how you hit the you dial in speed up. Like if you're really uptight, it would be directed over there as opposed to, you know, some normal cube, you know, to handle it. And voice, how long they let you sit on there on the line before your irritation coefficient goes to DEFCON 4. And that software has been developed by Manuel. If we have that, and it's on the Internet, what do you think SETI's got? You know? And you know, so you can talk to this entity, and it will, weirdly, sometimes choose to respond.
Interesting. You know, we're going to be getting close to running out of time, but I wanted to ask you about, I know that there's a whole group of scientists that are pushing for a an event horizon when artificial intelligence is more advanced than we are, and it literally takes over, and they're basically trusting that it will be benevolent.
Well, now, if it's not afraid, or all the other enemies of man, greed, lust, jealousy, whatever, you know, you know, the five deadly sins, listen, that's crazy.
I agree.
And not only is that crazy, that event horizon already came and went. We're sucked, and we don't even know it. That's what they were talking about, New World Order.
Yeah.
What level do you think they're talking about?
Well, it would have to be on the quantum level, wouldn't it?
Well, no. The first thing that DuPont did when they discovered Roswell is they went out and they mined the biggest mica deposit on Earth just to make sure that it wasn't centralized.
Wow.
So it's virtual. What does that mean? Well, is man real? You know, my holographic paper that I wrote, by the way, note the date when I wrote that. I was 10 years before Carl Priebram or John Bohm.
Wow.
And the only reason I didn't get nominated for a Nobel Prize was that all my work was classified top secret.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, well, it's okay. Yeah. I'm going to get a writer now with Garyev and Putoff. They both Putoff and Garyev are writing on the biohologram, and if they get nominated, I'll get a nod because I'm the original.
Wow.
And that's why Nexus, by the way, did that from DNA to biohologram. Duncan wanted, for the record, people to know who I was and what I was doing. I was just one of the whiz kids, you know, that came out of, I came out of Seattle. There was Robert Strom was out of New York. There were a couple of us that we knew each other in little clubs, you know.
Well, before we, this hour has flown by, you know, like like on wings. When is your new book, The Brain Spa, coming out?
Okay, Nick Begich and I are writing a sequel to his mind control book in about a week and a half. We've already written mostly, and I'm going back up the Eagle River to, we're going to do it, we're going to have some fun, kick back, and probably it will be released for the Brisbane conference in, you know, for Nexus in September.
And
it'll be out before September, but...
And have lots of mushrooms.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to have whole chapters in there on the mushrooms. I have written, actually, five basic articles on the Cordyceps sinensis hybrid, and I'd be happy to, on another interview if you want to, we can just focus on individual things. We never even get into Morgellons disease and what it really is.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
You want to do that, or are we out of time?
Yes, and then I wanted to find out more about natural DMT and substances that we can use to enhance that.
You can titrate dimethyltryptamine out of crabgrass with lemons.
Really?
Yeah. You just boil them down with some lemons, throw lemons in the pot, and scoop it off.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have you back. I hope you'll come back.
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Show
be fine.
With me.
Yeah, sure.
You have been fantastic.
Cool. And Morgellons disease is a natural phenomenon, by the way, with nematode.
Really?
Yeah, it was part of the Challenger experiments. When the Challenger blew up, the only thing that lived on that were the nematode experiments, and they got strewn over the six states where Morgellons disease appeared, and at the same time. Basically, using Occam's razor, I think that Morgellons is an earth-bound nematode that got exposed to the xenosphere and the life forms up there and mutated into this weird nematode-like action under a body's skin. And it's working just like it would in the soil.
Wow.
And with that said, it's easy to eliminate.
And the another thing I wanted to ask you about...
You just cultivate a crop on your arm and it'll take... I'm just kidding.
...is about chemtrails.
Chemtrails are... not what we think they are. Originally, that was a good deal. It had to do with reflecting light back, you know, off the Earth to try to reduce the global heating of the Earth. But then there's, you know, spills, intentionality, where they dump other things in the in the clouds, like when they're trying to change weather.
Yep.
Or they're doing some atmospheric studies with HARP or some other things. They'll put certain kinds of chemistries and crystals to cause phenomena to happen.
Well, listen.
In Iraq, the Second War, when they had those big storms, the first day of the invasion was an example of their weather control, where they had 12 tornadoes that came down right there in that desert the day they were going
to
attack them.
Wow. Well, I will have to have you back to complete or continue this conversation.
Sure.
Richard, thank you very, very much for being on the show.
My pleasure, sir.
And everybody, check out his website and stay tuned for the next show. Good night, everybody.
Did you hang up or are you there?
Okay. Hello.
You did hang up. Good.
No, is everybody there?
I'm here. I think he hung up.
I think so.
Well, so I guess I'm good to go or...
Yes. Well, we're still on the air. I just wanted to thank you and the audience. I know the levels were well off.
And, I talked too loud?
Well, we couldn't do much about that. I guess maybe one volume was too high and... The other one was too low, so we should have stuck you on separate lines.
Well, I can do it
we
differently.
Didn't even...
I have the ability to control my voice so that I can...
Oh, no. It's more all our fault. Trust me. We should have stuck you on separate lines.
Sounds to me like Max Headroom all over again.
No.
Catch the wave. Trust me.
It was a wonderful show, and to our audience, we're going to be bringing an archive.
Are you Lance? Is this Lance still?
No,
I didn't think so. Your voice is kind of different, so I didn't know who I was talking to here.
You're talking to Don.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Thanks for that little face shift there.
Yeah, I'm just...
I know, I had to catch up on it.
Behind the scenes.
Well, I'm just trying to figure it all out here.
Okay.
I'm out of kneecap Oregon, you know.
Well, you might want to say goodnight to the audience, because we're still live.
Oh, you've been...
That's what I've been trying to say.
Oh, no. Okay, yes. It was my pleasure. And, you know, what I'd really like is if you have specific questions, maybe I can become your Mr. Wizard, where I try to at least give you some directions that make sense. I think there's a lot of screwy things going on now, and the baby in the bathwater kind of thing are the serious part that I have trouble with. You know, some of it's really valid.
I hear you.
But we don't choose to study it because everything else is a bunch of horp and hoopy-doo. And the thing is, science has changed.